All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome. Good to see you. Hope everybody's staying warm. Oh, it's been a couple of cold days here. But we're gonna warm ourselves up with the light of Torah, and also a good way to get ready for Hanukkah. Hanukkah is upon us. God willing, Sunday night, we light our first candle. Okay, but we want to talk about in Parshas Vayishlach. Yes, last week's Torah portion. Great parsha, amazing, amazing parsha. What gets overlooked, I think, is a section of where we finally have the encounter of between Jacob and his brother Esau. Let me give you the backdrop. You all know the story, but let me just paint the picture for you. It's been 36 years. It's been 36 years since Jacob, quote unquote, stole the blessings that Esau thought were meant for him, took it from his father, right, from Isaac. And he spent 14 years in the yeshiva, and then 20 years he spent in the house of Lavan, marrying his wives, having his children. And now it's like I said, 36 years he's about to see Esau for the first time. And he's returning. And you can imagine the Esav is still out to kill him. The Torah tells us that Esav comes to greet him. He's on his way with 400 armed men just to take down Yaakov and his family. So he's not taking any chances. And this fateful, finally, the encounter happens. And I'm going to read for you the verse. I'm going to read you a couple of verses. Jacob raised his eyes and saw, behold, Esau was coming, and with him were 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two handmaids. He put the handmaids and their children first, Leah and her children next, Rachel and Yosef last. Then he himself went on ahead of them and bowed earthward 7 times until he reached his brother. If you're following, this is chapter 33. Esau ran toward him, embraced him, fell upon his neck, and kissed him. Then they wept. Okay? This itself needs a whole explanation. But here's where it gets wonky. Next sentence. He raised his eyes and saw the women and children. Esau sees all of Yaakov's women and children, and he asked, "Who are these to you?" Okay, strange question. This is the first recorded question. Maybe there was some introductions, maybe there was some, I don't know, pleasantries, but the Torah doesn't record it. The first recorded question that is in the exchange between Esav and Yaakov is Esav asking his brother, "Who are these to you?" In Hebrew, "Mi ele lach." Who are these to you? Okay. He answered, Yaakov responds, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." Okay, let's try that again, folks. Let's read the sentence again. He raised his eyes and saw the women and children, and he asked, "Who are these to you?" He answered, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." What's strange about this exchange?
Talk about the woman.
Okay. Esav asks about the wives and the children, and Yaakov only responds about the children. Correct? Okay. Let's even go with, we'll have some reason why he didn't discuss the women. But what kind of question is Esav asking? If you came knocking on my door, right? And the two of you show up, right? Okay, Marty and Janet, you come knocking on my door. Marty, you knock on my door. I open up and I see you. What do you think runs through my head when I see this nice lady standing next to you? Obviously, I'm assuming that's your wife. Okay? I mean, do I have to say, "Oh, Marty, interesting. Who's that?" Even if I didn't ever meet you before, to me, it's a pretty obvious. If I come with my family, especially there's women and children. What could this possibly be? You think maybe Jacob, I don't know, he took kids from a school somewhere? And he stopped by the closest house of harlotry and found a couple of women? Like, what kind of question is this? Who are these to you? And Yaakov only responds, oh, the children that God has graced me with. Okay. What are we to make of this? So, as always, we have to be true to the text. And I'm going to read it in Hebrew again because I'm going to emphasize one word. He raises his eyes and he sees the women and children, Vayomer, and he says, Mi ele lach. Who, me is who, ele, these, lach, to you. Who are these to you? How would you have asked the question, even if you wanted to inquire? How would you say it?
What are the kids?
Are these your children?
Are these Okay, are these your children? Let's assume you're from the old school where you only get three words. It's a telegram. What would the words, even if it's not three, two words?
Who are they?
Definitely.
Who are they? How about just simple? What's this word to you? Duh. Could it have simply said mi ela? Who are these? That would have worked for me. Mi ela lach? Who are these to you? Extra. Completely. It's superfluous. It's extra. Right, I'm going to use all my adjectives here, right? Completely unnecessary. Right, Muriel? Do I need that word lach to you? It's obvious. He's talking, he's having a conversation. Okay. Put that on hold. What?
Maybe Esau thought they were a gift to him.
Wow, interesting. So then why did he ask? He should have asked, are these for me? Not who are these to you? Should be, are these for me? He had no problem, because prior Yaakov had sent a whole bunch of gifts, whole bunch of tributes to try to cool Esav down. But let's put this on hold, let's put this on pause, and let's take a different look. Let's open up, you don't have it, but I'm going to read for you a Mishnah from Pirkei Avot. I figured we didn't do it, we didn't choose that this year, but we're going to get to it anyway. I want to read you this Mishnah. It's one of my favorite Mishnayos. It's in the third chapter, and it reads as follows. Rabbi Elazar Ish Bar Tosa Omer, it's chapter 3, verse, or Mishnah number 8. Rabbi Elazar of Bar Tosa says, give him from his own. Now the H is capitalized. Give him from his own, for you and your possessions are his. Ten lo in Hebrew, ten lo, give to him, mishelo, what is rightfully his. Why? She'ata, because you, v'shelecha, and that which is yours, shelo, is really his. Who wants to explain that? It's not super profound. It's a pretty straightforward Mishnah. What's it telling us? Simple.
Came from God.
Everything's
Right.
God's.
Everything that we have belongs to God. What we have been given in our life that God has graced us with is truly a gift from God. Therefore, says Rabbi Elazar in the Mishnah, we need to give of what we call ours to share with others, the mitzvah of tzedakah, and we'll talk a little bit more what else, but to give of what we have, because ultimately it's not really ours. We are at best custodians. We're custodials on God's account, and he lets us use for our purposes on condition that we share it with others. This is the concept of what we call tzedakah or giving maaser. Or giving a tithe, a tenth. God basically says, okay, here's 100% of the money. You have a job and you got $1,000. I'm going to make a deal with you. I'm going to let you keep 90% of your income. You can use it for whatever you want on condition that you share 10% with those in need. That's the deal. Very simple equation. I'll give you all of it as long as you share 10%. Comes along this Mishnah and says, very simply, don't lose sight of the fact that ultimately this is all God. God gave you 100% of that $1,000, gave you the ability to work, gave you a job. There are people who are unfortunately looking for jobs, don't have a job, or gave you a job that pays well. Great. I'm giving you 100% of it as long as you give away some of it because you recognize it all belongs to him. Yes, can we agree that that's the simple understanding of this Mishnah? Yes? Fabulous. Let's read it much more carefully because I'm going to read it with one word. I'm going to make an emphasis on a very important syllable. You with me? Okay. Rebbe Elazar says, Ten lo mishalo, give to him from what is rightfully his, she'ata v'shelecha shelo, because you and what is yours is really his. Isn't there an extra word there? I'll put the emphasis again. She'ata, that you belong to him too. See, if I were writing the Mishnah, and it would be really wrong, I think the emphasis of the Mishnah is all that you own, all that you have is really from God, and you have to share what you have. I would have simply said, give him from his own, for your possessions are his. That's how I would have said it. But it doesn't say that. It says, for you and your possessions are his. What does that mean?
That we are one of God's, I don't know what the word would be.
God's possessions.
Possessions, things.
Okay, and therefore, finish the thought.
everything that we have is not ours.
What do you
It's
mean? What you
God's.
have is already included in your possessions. What's
But
you versus your possessions?
our possessions don't have a
you
soul.
is you.
What
You
is, yeah, so what are you
yourself.
supposed to do about me?
Well, we are also created by God.
Yeah, and
We're
therefore,
supposed to be holy. We're
talk.
supposed to make
No,
ourselves
don't be
holy.
so religious on me. Come on.
Pardon
What's
me.
the pivotal sentence in this Mishnah? I'll start again. Rabbi Elazar of Bartosa says, give him from his own, for you and your possessions are his. What is the action being expressed in this Mishnah? What's the action?
Give.
Give. So what am I supposed to give of? Myself.
Yourself.
Ah, now we're getting somewhere. You see, we are trained to think that my job of giving tzedakah, my job of giving maaser, of tithing and giving up, is of what I own. My money, my finances, my this, my that, all the possessions I'm supposed to share if somebody needs to borrow my car, things I'm supposed to give of. Why? Because all the things I have are truly gifts from God. Except you would be falling short of what the real obligation is. Yeah, it's true you have to give of your possessions, but you have to give of yourself. Why? Because all of your abilities, all of your talents, all of your intellect, everything about you is also a gift from God that we have an obligation to share with others. Not just what I physically own, but my entire essence. I owe my existence to God, and therefore I have to share of it. If I'm blessed with being handy, I know I'm up there in the top 10 all-time famous Jews who are handy. I say top 10 because there's probably only 15 of us,
Great.
right? If that's the ability, then it's my responsibility to share that. One of my neighbors happened to mention to me that his oven has been giving him problems. And I said, well, what's the issue? So he looked at me like, you're a rabbi. What's your problem? I said, well, what's the problem? And he described for me. And I said, well, it sounds like the igniter. It's one of those electric ignite, like most of us have already these stoves. And I said, it's one of those starters, the igniters. He says, yeah, how do you know? I said, because I had that and I can replace it. If you order the part, I'm happy to come do it. He looked at me like I had horns growing out of my head. I'm like, what do you know about? But the answer is, I did it in my own oven. I know how to do it. He ordered it. I showed him exactly which one he needs. I went over, and in less than 45 minutes, we had it replaced. Easy peasy. That's what this Mishnah says. The Mishnah is not only telling us to share of our possessions, we have to share of ourselves, our time, our intellect, our capabilities. If I'm good at something, I should be helping somebody with that. That's part of the obligation. Because ultimately, what this Mishnah is saying, and you said it correctly, is that everything, including me, is a gift from God. Everything. There is no such thing, and this is the key phrase, there's no such thing as my own. I, me, what I am and what I have achieved is nothing short of a gift from God. That is the thrust of the Mishnah, and this is going to be the interesting dialogue between Esav and Yaakov. Because let's remember, let's take it a step before we even get back to Yaakov and Esav. Let's go to the Ten Commandments. We did that once upon a time, right? Number two on the list. Anybody?
Did he say
no idols?
Good. Very good. Do not have lo yia lecha Elohim acherim. Do not have, quote unquote, any other gods before me, right? No idols, no idea of partnership. It's God alone. No other deities, no other. Listen to the phrase. Lo yihyeh, there shall not be lecha. What is the word lecha? To you.
You for you.
Lo yihyeh lecha, there shall not be to or for you Elohim acherim, other gods. Why? Begun. Lo yihyeh lecha. Don't live with the philosophy of lecha. It's yours. Why? Because that leads to Elohim acherim, other gods. You know who the other god is when you think you've done it all? You've accomplished it. You know who the other God is?
You.
You. Exactly right. The word lecha in these contexts is there to emphasize the philosophy or the ideology of that which I have achieved is mine. It's lecha. It's for you. Got it. Lo yiyeh lecha. Don't live with that philosophy of it's mine. It's not yours. That's a philosophy of the category, I should say, of belief in anything but God. Let's take it even further. Susan, right up your alley. You love this kind of stuff. We had a few weeks ago, we were introduced to our patriarch, Abraham. Avraham Avinu. Abraham, our patriarch. And we're told in that parsha, that famous parsha that we talked about, that Avraham goes on a journey. What's the name of that parsha? What is it?
Was that Leica?
Lech
Lech lecha.
Lech lecha.
Lech lecha. There's two words there. They are spelled identically. Lech is lamed, final chaf. Lecha, lamed, final chaf. Lech. Lecha, go, and we translate it go for yourself because it's for your benefit, yada, 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 all the different commentaries on it. This is the beginning of the foundation of the Jewish nation. It starts with a journey where Avraham is told that he has to leave his homeland, he has to leave his father's house, he has to leave his birthplace, and it's not enough for him to just renounce belief in idol worship, which was what was in vogue back then. It's not enough for him to factually just not serve idols. He needs lech, he needs to go lecha, away from the philosophy that it's what is mine. You have to break free from the philosophy that I did this on my own. You are starting a journey. The ideology of lecha, lech, go away from the ideology of lecha, of that which you think it belongs to you. If you want to form the Jewish people, Avraham, if you want to become the patriarch then you have to lay down the foundation that as a people, we always look up and ascribe any matter of success we have in our life as a gift from God. Any talents that we have been granted, any abilities is an acknowledgement that it's a gift. Lech, move away from lecha, from the ideology of it's yours. You need to move away from that. And I'll go even further. This is not only when it comes to the physical realm of possessions that we have, or even talents and abilities that we have. I'm going to go even further and say, even our spiritual accomplishments have to be with an acknowledgement that I was able to do it because I was given a gift. I have to be able to acknowledge that even my spiritual, my intellectual talents and abilities are all from Hashem. It's fascinating. Look at this word lecha. For you think it's yours, right? Two letters, the lamed and the final chaf. Yes? Tell me the characteristics of the letter lamed. What immediately comes to mind?
It's tall.
Big.
It's the tallest letter. It's the letter that goes above the line.
Oh.
Goes above the line. Yeah? And how about the final chaf?
The
Below the line.
lowest.
It goes below the line. How interesting that the word lecha that we're describing here of the ideology that says, it's mine, it's all mine, right? It's for you. People have the idea that even things, the tallest letter reaching heavenward and the lowest letter reaching earthward, we need to always recognize that it's not yours, that it's a gift. It's a gift from above. So let's go back to Esav here. Esav is the person who in the Torah is the person who is pretty much is the example of someone who thinks he's done the accomplishment himself. What is his profession?
A
Hunter.
hunter.
He's a hunter. Hey, come on. He comes home, he can cook the bacon. Kosher, of course, right? And he goes, and he's the one. I shot the bow and arrow. I got the animal. I brought it home. Look at my catch, right? Look what I did. It's all about me, what I've done. In Hebrew, it's called kochi, my strength, v'otzem yadi, and the power of my hand. That's an Esav mentality. So Esav now encounters Yaakov for the first time in decades, and he sees Yaakov has a lot. Yaakov has a family, quite a large family. He has cattle. He has sheep. He's doing quite well for himself. And what are the words Esav, who wants to reinforce his philosophy of lecha, he asks the fundamental question. And he says, oh, I see all of the wealth. I see all of the success. I see the women. I see the children. I see the flock. I see the cattle. I see servants. I see all of your wealth and success that you've achieved. Wow. How'd you do it? Me, what were the three words Esav asked of Yaakov? Me, Eleh, Lach. There's that word lecha. There's that word. Who are these to you? Good job, Jacob. How'd you do it? Tell me the secret. I know how I do it, but man, I didn't think you had it in you. You're not that kind of guy. Me, Eileh Loch. How'd you do that? Wow. You do agree with my philosophy. Good job, Yaakov. Yeah. And what's Yaakov's response? What was his answer? He answered, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. How's that for a retort? Esav wants to reinforce the idea, oh, you must have the same philosophy. Look at what you've done Look at what you've accomplished. Mi elelach. Wow. And Yaakov says, No. You misunderstand. This is all a gift from God. Even children. Not because he left out the women. It's because he's emphasizing even children, which almost every human being takes credit for. This is my child. I was the sperm donor. The mother's like, I was the egg donor. Look what I did. Look at me. And especially if they look carbon copies of us, right? We were like, that's my pride and joy. Yaakov says, even the children I acknowledge were graciously gifted to me by God. No, Esav, I do not agree with your philosophy of lecha, that it's all ascribed to you. No, just the opposite. Not my accomplishment. This is all a grace and a gift from God. But Esav's not done. Just a few verses later, he asked, what did you intend by that whole camp that I met? In Hebrew, Esav says, listen, you'll hear the word. I won't even have to emphasize it. It's verse 8. Vayomer, Esav says, Mi lecha kol ha-machaneh hazeh asher pagashti. Who is what? What is all of this? What did you intend by the whole camp that I have now just encountered? Mi lecha kol ha-machaneh. All this camp, this huge camp of women and children and the flocks and everything else. What's this? Why are you all coming here? Milcha. Okay, you can simply say, he said, why are you all doing? What are you all doing here? But I think Esav is pushing the envelope further. He's pushing his agenda. He says, Milcha kol ha-machaneh. Okay, what is Yaakov's response? Why are we all here? Why am I here together with my family and my possessions? He answers, to gain favor in my Lord's eyes. To find favor in your eyes, Esav. This is not about a display of my possessions, a display of my wealth. Everything I have has a purpose. God has gifted it to me for a reason. And you know what the reason is? So that I can give you a present. So that I can give something to you. This isn't just, like I said, a display of all that I have, just the opposite. This is for a purpose. What's the purpose? To hopefully have peace with you. And this is the reason why God gave it to me. Look at Esav's neck response. Esav says, Yesh li rav. Yesh li rav, achi. I have a lot. Achi, my brother, Yehi lecha asher lecha. My brother, let what you have remain yours. Do you not hear the same philosophy being uttered in another way? Where Esav is again trying to impress, I have a lot of stuff. I'm glad you do. You have your stuff. I'll have my stuff. That's an Esav mentality. You have yours. I have mine. And what's mine is mine, and what's yours, good for you, that's yours. No mention of God, no mention of a gift, no nothing. I have a lot, Esav says. My brother, you keep. I have so much that I have achieved, how much I have earned. You too, you should enjoy your wealth that you've earned. What is it? What does Yaakov respond? This is the line of all lines, ladies and gentlemen. Yaakov says, no, I beg of you. If I have found favor in your eyes, he continues, and he says in verse 11, please accept my gift which was brought to you, inasmuch as God has been gracious to me, and inasmuch as I have everything. Esav, when he describes his wealth, he says, I have much, I have a lot. Michelle, if you're looking in it, it's verse, look at verse 9.
Right.
9 says, Esau says, I have plenty. I have a lot. Yesh li rav. I got a lot. Jump down to verse 11, where Jacob responds and he says, God has been gracious to me, and inasmuch as I have everything. I don't have much. I have everything I need. What's the difference between I have much or I have everything?
Got it all.
Huh?
Well, it means there's nothing more you need.
Okay. As opposed to I have much.
He's satisfied with what he has.
Okay. Very good. Aesop says, I got lots and lots. Wink, wink, but there's always room for more. Yaakov says, I have everything I need. Why? Because God has given me exactly what I need. You see, if you live with the philosophy that it's my responsibility to achieve and earn everything, you'll never get there. You'll never be satisfied because no matter what you get, no matter how much you get, there's always one more. But if you're with a philosophy like Yaakov that says, I have everything, God grants me and gifts me all that I need, then I have nothing more. I'm good. I'm satisfied. Exactly like you said, Sid. He's satisfied with what he has. I have everything. What's the Hebrew word for everything?
Paul
Kol. How do you spell it?
Puf Lamed
Not kuf.
Puf
Kaf lamed.
Aflamed
Kaf lamed.
Aflamed Aflamed.
Yeah, kaf lamed. Okay, how is that in relationship to lacha? What's the letters of lacha?
Lamed
Lamed,
Chaf.
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 And this is
Chaf
Chaf Lamed. It's the
lamed.
exact opposite. They're inverted of each other. It's because that's the difference. How do you look at it? If you look at it as lacha, it's all mine, then you keep going and going and going, and Esav's never satisfied. But if you have the philosophy that God grants me what I need, and I acknowledge that everything I have is from God, then I have flip it. It's just the opposite. It's not my achievements, it's a recognition that God is giving me everything. Hence the word kol. How's that for a flip? Tell you, you can't make this stuff up. Kaf lamed is the opposite of lamed kaf. That's what it is. This philosophy that Esav has of where it's a matter of what I need to achieve, nothing to do with what God grants me, gets passed down to his descendants. Who is one of the most famous descendants of Esav himself? Not a good guy.
Amarlok.
Very good, Robin. Amalek. Amalek is Esav's grandson. We know the nation that comes from this man named Amalek. We know his story because that's the nation that ambushed us on the way out of Egypt, right? The time of the Exodus. So I want to read you. What does the Torah tell us? What our relationship with Amalek is? Here's what it says. This is if you want to follow this, this is all the way at the end of the Torah in the book of Devarim. In chapter 25, verse 17, the Torah warns us, Zachar, remember, Eis asher asalecha Amalek baderech betzeischem mi Mitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you on your way out of leaving Egypt. Remember that they happened upon you, they struck those of you who were in the back, right? We know the story. Oh, but I'm going to make the emphasis now. Remember, Eis asher asa lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. Again, that word is not necessary. Who's reading this verse? We are. Remember what Amalek did on the way out of Egypt. Who else did he do it to? Of course, it was to us. No, but understand that Amalek is all about don't acknowledge God. Amalek is all about do not acknowledge that there's a supreme being that plays any role in world affairs or in people's lives. Maybe he created it once upon a time, but even that I'm not so sure. It's all about me, what I accomplish, what I can do. That's what Amalek all stands for. And hence, in the verse that the Torah reminds us never to forget and to remember what Amalek You know what he did? Is lecha. He tried to enforce his ideology about it all being about you and disconnecting from God. That's what Amalek stands for. In fact, Amalek, the numerical value, the gematria of Amalek is the same as the word rum. No, not the drink. Rum in Hebrew means high and mighty, lofty. The Torah warns us that sometimes if we eat well and we sleep well and we are successful with our monetary possessions, we forget Hashem. V'ram levavecha, your heart will become haughty. V'shachachta eis Hashem Elokecha, and you will forget Hashem your God. That's what Amalek is all about. So Hashem says the day will come that Amalek will be destroyed. And I want you to listen again. V'haya, and it will be. I'm reading from those same verses. V'haniach, I'll read it in English first. It shall be that when Hashem your God gives you rest from all your enemies all around, in the land that Hashem your God gives you as an inheritance to possess it, you shall wipe out the memory of Amalek from under the heaven. You shall not forget. Right? We're familiar with this. We read this on the Shabbos before Purim, famously known as Parshas Zachar. Right? We remember what Amalek did to us. We read it the Shabbos before Purim because who's the descendant who plays the pivotal role in the story of Purim who's from Amalek?
Haman, Haman.
Haman. So therefore, our sages decreed that we read the story about Amalek the Shabbos before Purim. Okay. But Hashem says, it shall be, the day will come when he will give us rest from our enemies all around, that we will be finished and wipe out Amalek once and for all. But now I'm going to read it to you in Hebrew. V'haya, and it will be. V'haniach Hashem Elokecha, when Hashem will let it be, will give you rest, will give rest. Lecha. He will give you rest from that ideology that Amalek stands for about lecha, being all about you, not about God. He will give you rest from all of your enemies around who have tried to impress upon us this philosophy. Eventually, we will get a reprieve from these enemies promoting the lecha philosophy. And therefore, we will be left with to wipe out the memory of Amalek from under the heavens. What does that mean? I know it sounds poetic, but the Torah is not poetry. What would the Torah be telling us? It'll be wiped out from under the heavens, and all that will be left is
People who understand that it's everything's from God.
good. Meaning they will be wiped out because of the idea that everything comes from above, right? From below, under the heavens. Everything comes from there, contrary to the concept of Amalek. One last piece. We're on time. Perfect. We touched on Purim very briefly. Now we have to touch on Pesach. We haven't even gotten to Hanukkah yet. We all, not, I shouldn't say that. Many, many, many people who somehow managed to make it through the entire Seder. Some present company excluded, I know. But at the very end of Nirtzah, there are a whole bunch of songs. Famous one, Chad Gadya, right? The one kid. But there's a song called Adir B'Melucha. And it goes according to the acrostic of the Aleph Beis, and it is describing different praises about Hashem. But after a few of them, there's a refrain. And the refrain is exactly the same after each one. Lecha, ulecha, lecha, ki lecha, lecha, af lecha, lecha, Hashem, hamam, lecha, ki lo, no, ki lo, ya, Sound familiar? You can say no, because some of you are not up at that point, or you're drunk. So
Yes.
you have a bye. But there is such a song towards the end of the. What is going on in that song? Marty, you sound familiar? You remember it, right? Maybe you know a different tune. But you ever wonder what is going on in that song and what's with the repetitions of Lacha and Lacha and Lacha and Lacha? You feel like you said it enough times. Ah, maybe tonight's conversation will shed a little light on this. The world, Amalek, The Asavs of the world are trying to impress upon us that it's all about lecha. It's all about you, what you can achieve, what you can earn, what you accomplish. And we say, no. It's what Hashem has granted me. It's what Hashem has gifted me. I acknowledge it's from Hashem. So we read this song, where each stanza ends with this, meaning to say that everything, if it goes according to the Aleph Beis, there's 22 of them. Everything that was created with the 22 letters of the Torah, they all belong to Hashem. And how do we say that? We say lecha. Oh, you get nervous. Oh, that's like the buzzword. That's like the kryptonite. Don't say it. Don't say it. We say lecha ulecha, you and you. Lecha ki lecha. Lecha af lecha. But then comes the magical phrase, lecha Hashem hamamlacha. To you, Hashem is kingship. Oh, the lecha is being repackaged. It's getting repurposed in its proper place. Lecha, that the world wants us to look at ourselves and say, oh, this is all about me. I turn it around and say, it's all about Lecha Hashem. To you, Hashem, is the kingdom. Everything in this world, from Aleph to Tav, which is how that song goes, the acrostics of the Aleph Beis. Everything we would mention is as actually singing a praise that it's all you, Hashem. Lecha Hashem hamamlacha. To you is the kingdom. To you is this kingship. It all belongs to you. Susan, for you. Let's count up the number of times that each refrain has the word lecha. Well, lecha ulecha. Lecha ki lecha, lecha af lecha, lecha Hashem hamam lecha. Seven times. Yeah? Come on. What's the,
Completion.
yeah, completion. How do you know seven is completion?
How much time do you have?
So short answer. How do we know seven is completion? Give me a good prime example.
So they got arrested.
Yeah,
Creation.
he created the world in 7 days. That's the idea, right? The number seven, and I said you, Susan, because the idea of the seven sfirot, the seven lower sfirot that God interacts with us in this world, that's the day-to-day activities, right? That's the seven. Ultimately, everything belongs to you, Hashem. That's what's being sung. After going through an entire Seder, of acknowledging that it was Hashem who took us out of Egypt. It was Hashem who brought the plagues. It was Hashem who split the sea. It was Hashem who brought the man. It was Hashem who took us to Mount Sinai. It was Hashem, 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 always nonstop. We finish the Seder with saying it's not unique to the Exodus. It's not unique to that one time event in history, but from Aleph to Tav, everything in our world. Lecha Hashem Hamam Lecha. To you, God, is everything. And I acknowledge that at the end of my Seder. Perhaps, just putting a bow on all of this, if we take this to heart, meaning Yaakov and Esav, I go back to my original question. They haven't seen each other in so long. And for what seems to be a for lack of a better word, a wimpy conversation, this is what the Torah chooses to record as the first encounter between Yaakov and Esav? Who are these to you? Oh, these are the kids that Hashem gifted me. Really? But now what we see is a tremendous depth. What's at play is what's always at play between Yaakov and Esav. This is always about the heavyweight fight between good and evil. About a philosophy that acknowledges God in the world and a philosophy that negates God in this world. Esav stands diametrically opposed to Yaakov. I should say it better. Yaakov stands diametrically opposed to Esav. And in every encounter between Yaakov and Esav, you have to pull back the the curtain. You have to dig a little deeper and say, what's the argument? What are they discussing? I promise you, the Torah would not have recorded it if it was just social pleasantry. Oh, so nice to see. Are these your wives? Are these your, oh, they're so pretty. Where'd you get those outfits? I promise you, the Torah wasn't giving us social pleasantry conversation. But if it recorded it, it begs the question, what are they talking about? This is one path, one possible understanding that at the heart of this conversation is a matter of a philosophy, is whether it's lecha, it's all about you, or is it lecha Hashem hamam lecha, or is it to you Hashem who's the king of the universe? If everything I have, both my possessions, my talents, my abilities, my accomplishments, my achievements, everything is because God has given me the ability to do that. If you can have that mentality through life, you're living like Yaakov, and you can happily say, Yesh li kol, I have everything I need. There's no reason for me to prove myself and achieve even more. I put in all my effort, and Hashem hopefully blesses me, and I have what I need. This is the bracha we make every single morning in the morning blessings that list when we first get up, right? The first one that Hashem gives knowledge to the rooster to know the difference between day and night, and Hashem, right? Oh, and then you get one towards the end. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the Universe, sha'asa li kol tzarki, that has made for me all of my needs. How do you make such a bracha? Do you go to bed every night saying, man, I could have done more. I should have done more. If only I had made that stock tip that guy gave me, I'm kicking myself. Okay, you can kick yourself. But in the morning you wake up and you say, I have what Hashem wants me to have. Not a penny more am I going to steal. Is it going to make it better? And no matter what I do, right? Someone asked me, he says, how could Hashem ask you not to work on Shabbos? Isn't he denying you the opportunity for him to give you the rightful parnasa and the rightful support? I said, that's not a fair question. It's because if he's giving me my support, he knows how to do it in 6 days, and as long as I do the rules on the seventh. He's not bound by the laws of nature that says, oh, if I work 6 days and I get $1,000, if I work 7 days, I'll get 1,500. It doesn't work that way. Hashem will get me my $1,000 in 6 days, not seven. Oh, I never thought about it like that. It's true. Hashem gives us what we need, but we have to acknowledge that that which we have is because Hashem wants us to have it, and it's what I need. That's a Yaakov philosophy, and therefore Yaakov can say, Yesh li kol, I have everything I need. That I think is a much more meaningful understanding of this conversation. Much better than I've had for many, many decades. This was a new insight for me this year. I hadn't seen this before. Any ideas, thoughts, questions, comments? Throw tomatoes, whatever you want to do. Go ahead. Yes, go ahead, Robin.
I think it's sort of a comment slash question. So with Lake Lakah, it's going on a journey physically, but then also meaning like journey, you're actually going on the journey physically, but then I guess it's also like you're saying the spiritual journey that you're moving away from the physical, saying
Exactly.
it's yourself moving away from that the journey and moving in the journey towards saying it's from God. So it's a both,
Correct.
it, right? Is that with Lake Lakah?
100%. It's exactly right. I'll tell you this. I had a great conversation with someone this morning. Think about it. Whatever, it's late, and I've already exhausted your abilities for one night. But think about this. There is no true law of the physical realm unless it's true in a spiritual realm. I'll say that again. If something is for something to be true in the physical realm, it has to have a corresponding truth in the spiritual realm. I'll give you a simple example. The law of inertia. The law of inertia is a very simple law of physics. Something at rest will remain at rest unless an external something will push it in motion. I forgot the exact terminology, right? But it needs something on the something to move it. Otherwise, it will stay at rest. Yes? That is a true law of physics. Why? Because it's a true law of spirituality. You will remain where you are unless there's something that's an external. It could be a good schmooze, it could be a good class, it could be something that happens in your life, but there needs to be something that gets you off your keister. It's the only way. Otherwise, you'll just remain status quo. That's the idea of always being in motion. We do not. I read this cartoon years ago, Ziggy. I love Ziggy. Great cartoon. And he has one of them. He's contemplating, and I thoroughly disagree with it. But he's contemplating. He works so hard, and he's doing this, and he's doing this, and he's doing this. And then at the last frame, it says, maybe we should focus more on being human beings and not human doings. And I disagree 100%, but he got me to think about it. We're not human beings. We're not meant just to be. We're meant to do. We should really be called human doings. That's really the right answer. Because we're always, like you said, Robin, we're always supposed to be on this journey of working on ourselves to move away from the philosophy of it's me, it's me, it's me. And learning to do the opposite of recognizing that I was gifted this, and therefore it's my responsibility to give of it as well. Jeff, you were going to say something?
I was just going to make a comment about the parsha that we were talking about, is that Esau came with 400 soldiers. Why didn't he attack?
Great question. What'd you come up with?
I don't know. I didn't come up with anything. I mean, obviously he had malintent.
Oh,
Maybe
100%.
it's just when he came upon all these unarmed people, he felt like he didn't want to do that, or some miracle. I don't know.
Okay. Now we're getting somewhere. The you're touching on a very important point. The commentaries all wonder the same thing. He's clearly coming with an intent to harm Yaakov, but he doesn't. In fact, I glossed over and I was hoping you wouldn't catch me on it. It says Esau ran toward him, embraced him, fell upon his neck, kissed him, and then they wept. That was the surprise ending I was not anticipating. I was expecting, like you, Jeff, he was going to come out guns blazing and absolutely rip Yaakov's head off, scream at him, tell him, you ganav, you stole this, you did this, and blah, blah. He sees him, gives him a brotherly hug, and he gives him a kiss. I was shocked. However, thankfully, we had a great commentary called Rashi, who came before us. And Rashi notices something very strange on the word, and he kissed him. If you were to look in the text of the Torah itself, look in a Torah scroll,
Give me a
above,
minute.
yeah, above the word, and he kissed him, are dots, just like ink drops. Doesn't spell anything. It's just there, almost like we would say nowadays, using bold or highlighted. It's there to make an emphasis. His kiss. Now, what would the emphasis be? You can go in two directions. You can say, wow, he really kissed him. Wow, that is shocking. It's not what I was anticipating. Or maybe the Torah is emphasizing that the kiss was not
You're
such a
right.
kiss. Huh? That the kiss was not such a kiss. It says he kissed him, but there's a kiss and then there's, I'm not so sure. Why? Because, just give me one second. I have to run off the meeting. But Rashi points out from the sages that his kiss was not a kiss. He actually tried to bite him on the neck. I didn't bring it up, but if you notice, he fell upon his neck. You don't fall on someone's neck. You fall on someone's shoulder. That's what do you mean? He fell on his neck and he kissed him. Rashi quotes the early sages and says, yeah, because he was, okay, I'm not going to come with guns blazing, but I'm not so sure I got the hatred out of me. I'm this close to Yaakov, I'm going to, argh. He gnarls his teeth. He's ready to take a bite out of his neck. Something's going on here. So, yes, Jeff, on the surface, they seem to be okay. They do end up parting ways somewhat peacefully. But there's something more there. There's something more. Maybe another time we'll delve into this a little bit more. But it's, yeah, those dots are there to say, something more is going on. Okay. Yeah, Marty.
Just wondering if Jacob had already sent him all of the gifts, and then he approaches him and he's bowing towards him seven times. Maybe that had shown something to Esau.
Okay, good.
And another thing is that the last time they had met, Jacob was the deceiver, and now he's the one who is coming in honesty and openness towards Esau. Could that have had something to do with it as well?
I leave open all of your suggestions. I think they are factors, but we have to figure out what really changed. If Asa, you I don't want to talk in personal terms, right? But if somebody harbors real hatred for 30 years, hard to think that it dissipates in 10 minutes. With the gifts, with the honesty, with all of that, how does it change that quickly? Or does it? It's my cliffhanger. Or does it? Tune in next week when Rabbi T says, right? Okay, we good? All right. I
He's going to connect it to Hanukkah?
No, he doesn't have time.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I can, but I gotta run. The Zoom. I have another Zoom meeting right after this. But yeah,
Okay.
there's a way to connect. Think about it. Think about what did the Hashmonaim do? What did Matisyahu and his children do? What was it all about? What is it that they found the oil with the seal of the Kohen Gadol? There's a certain philosophy there. There's a certain philosophy, and it fits very much in line with understanding that it's not about me, it's about connecting to Hashem, recognizing the gifts of Hashem. It all plays into that. Think about it. I'm curious what you'll come up with, but it's definitely connected to Hanukkah. Okay, ladies, gentlemen, have a great rest of the week.
Yeah,
Have a
thank you
good
so
trip.
much. Just